Today on The Grave Talks, dealing with demons, a conversation with Eric Vitale. Eric Vitale grew up in a strong Italian household where the idea of ghosts was simply accepted as a way of life. It wasn't talked about much, but it was just as real as green grass. He would grow up seeing rituals performed when needed, prayers being said for those in need, and an entity that would befriend his little brother. This would lead him on a journey into professional paranormal investigation with a focus on the dark or demonic side of things, including being a part of Travel Channel's Ghost Loop series and a member of the New England Society for Psychic Research. This is the story of what brought Eric into the world of the supernatural.
Well, actually, it was childhood. I grew up in New Jersey. I live in Connecticut now. And when I was a kid, my parents used to always bring me to my aunt and uncle's house every Saturday. I had five cousins, and I felt like I had, you know, brothers and sisters. I loved it. So every Saturday, we would go to my aunt and uncle's house, and they lived in Glen Ridge, New Jersey. And it was a big, beautiful, old colonial house. And one thing that I will never forget about it, it had the infamous-looking Amityville windows on the top. And that always kind of freaked me out when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But where it started, actually, I remember one morning we were all sitting there eating breakfast together, and I looked up on the cabinet, and I said, "Aunt Pat, who's Murmur?" Now, my cousin Danny had made a family tree with all his brothers and sisters on it.
Yeah.
But there was someone on there, and it said Murmur. I'm like, "Who's Murmur?" And they all kind of like hushed it away, and they said, my one cousin had said, "Oh, Eric, don't worry about it, that's just Danny's imaginary friend." So as the years would go on and I started getting older, they would start talking to me about these ghost stories, and there was actually a ghost in the house, and her name was Murmur. And I actually never seen this apparition, but my younger brother did, and it scared him. He was a little boy, and he woke up and she was like drifting above him, and he freaked out. But there was a story that my cousins had told me where no one was home one night except for my two cousins, Kenny and Matthew. And they hear the water running in the bathroom, and they're like, "What's going on? Like, who's in there? No one's home but us." So they go to knock on the door, and as they knock on the door, you know, they're like, "Who's in there?" The water stops. They open the door, and just mist comes drifting out. And let me tell you, ever since that story, I would never use that bathroom. I would always go to the other end of the hall and use the other bathroom. And long story short, you know, my aunt and uncle's house was haunted. And as the years would go on and I got older and they knew I was investigating the paranormal, they started talking to me about this just a couple years ago. I mean, I just turned 39 yesterday. They didn't talk to me about this until just recently because they didn't want to scare me as a child.
And they thought now maybe 39, he can handle it now probably.
Yeah, he can, you know, he's been running around chasing ghosts and demons. We can talk to him about this now. But, I never had seen Murmur, but the stories just, I mean, it freaked me out. I remember going to have my youngest cousin, Danny, and I were very close in age, and we would always hang out and play with our G.I. Joes, and I'd go there for a sleepover, and I just start getting freaked out, and I had to have my mom come back and pick me up. I'm like, I can't spend the night in this house. I can't.
Before your family sat you down or came up in conversation when you had looked at that that family tree and asked about Murmur, did you up to that point believe in ghosts? Had you had any experiences? Where was your mind at that time?
No, I was just a little kid. I mean, I was like 9 years old. I was just like, "Who's Murmur?" Mm-hmm. You know, who's Murmur?
Yeah.
I know all you guys are my cousins, but who's Murmur?
Yeah.
But also there's another one that really stands out for me. This story I'll never forget. In fact, I want to write a book, and I want this to be the introduction to my book. Actually, this happened before I was born. My parents grew up in a town in New Jersey. They're high school sweethearts, Lodi, New Jersey, home of the notorious punk rock band, The Misfits. They actually went to high school with The Misfits, my mother and father. So they were living in an apartment. And one morning, my dad had gone to work, and my mom was home alone. It was still dark out, and she heard a voice say to her, "Pretty lady," and the bed kind of like get indented, like someone sat on the bed. She also told me they had found out someone actually hung themselves in that apartment. So I always thought to myself, was that guy earthbound, or was it possibly something demonic? Because we're Catholic, and in the Catholic religion, when you commit suicide, that's the ultimate sin. So that kind of always stuck with me, mm-hmm. that situation my mother was in before I was born.
Let me ask you about, you said when you went to the house, there were times when you were staying over there on your weekly Saturday visits where you were just freaking out and you didn't know why. You had to have your mom and dad come and get you. I'm assuming this is after you had heard about Murmur. When you look, when you look back on that, how much of that do you think was your mind, running with it? Because now you're aware that there's this ghost in this house, or at least your family is telling you this. And you're having all these, but you're not physically seeing it. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you can't have an experience either. So tell me about what were you feeling after that fact, as opposed to what you were feeling before? Did the house have an oddness to it that you couldn't put your finger on even before you found out about Murmur?
I mean, it was a really old colonial house. I mean, think of the quintessential old looking haunted house. I mean, everything complete with like the double doors you open up and it's a big library. I mean, it was just a really big old house. And yeah, I mean, I didn't like going all the way upstairs to the attic where my oldest cousin had his room. I just, it would freak me out. It would definitely freak me out. Even with the big parties, we're a big Italian family and there'd be 100 people there for like a party. And I would still be like, I'm not going all the way up there,
How did the rest of your family handle the situation as far as it being a haunted house and them having it? Obviously, others had encounters. Was it talked about? Was it accepted? Was it, some families will be like, don't talk about it. Don't freak out the kids. Just kind of regular social interactions, what was the environment like knowing that this was going on?
Seriously, they act like it wasn't going on at all.
Okay.
Just like no one spoke about it. It was just kind of something between the kids. That says my earliest memories, it mm-hmm. was just like something like my cousins would bring up to me, but never was it spoken about. It was just when I had gotten older, my aunt and uncle, they live in Colorado and I was in Jersey. I'd moved to Connecticut recently, but they would come and visit. And then we'd start talking about it because, through social media, they see everything I've been doing like the past 6-7 years of my life, being an investigator, and then everything with the TV show, traveling America. So they're like, I had asked them and we just had a really long conversation about it. They're like, yeah, we didn't want to tell you. You were like 9-10 years old. We didn't want to scare you.
Yeah. As you look back onto that situation, was that really what inspired you to continue later in life doing investigating, or was there more to your childhood in terms of run-ins with the paranormal?
It's definitely rooted in that, but I definitely had quite a few other experiences. And at the same time, I was always kind of into like the dark side and like horror films and stuff like that. So it makes perfectly good sense that this is what I'm doing now. But there's some other experiences I had that would just straight up just sound crazy, to be honest to you. One thing that I will never forget, and it's still frightening to think about it. Again, I said I was raised Catholic. I am Catholic. Mm-hmm. I remember one night I was laying in bed. I don't remember how old I was. I could have been, maybe it was around 9 or 10. But I remember hearing a voice say, "The demons are here." And let me tell you something. I didn't even know what demons were at that point in my life. Why would I hear that? Why would I have heard a voice say that in my room when I was a child? And I've thought about that a lot over the years. And I really think it's because what I'm doing now as an investigator, I'm really drawn towards the darker cases. I want to expose the devil. That's what I want to do. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people that are being tormented by the devil, and a lot of people don't think the devil exists. but I know the devil exists, and that's his greatest achievement, is to get people to think he doesn't exist. So I think when I heard that back then, it was like, these things knew what I was going to get into when I was older, you know, studying demonology and things like that. And they were already trying to instill fear in me because they could feed off of that.
Mm-hmm. When you heard those words, and this is just kind of a retrospective question where you look back at it, and you said you've been doing a lot of that. When you heard the demons are here, that could be taken a couple of ways. I mean, it could be taken as a warning from something that's not bad, that is just, you know, in that same environment. Or it could be taken almost as a taunt from the actual demons themselves going, hey, we're here.
Mm-hmm.
What? How do you look at that? What do you think you encountered?
I looking back now, I remember hearing that, and it almost felt like it came from, like, you could feel it. You mm-hmm. could feel it. And I at this point now in my life, I think it was something of a demonic force, because it scared the living hell out of me. And if it was something nice, why would they want to scare the hell out of me? You know what I mean? And yeah. I remember telling my father about it, and his face just dropped, and just a look of horror was on his face when I had told him that. And he just kind of like looked at my mother, and they looked back at me, and he's like, just make sure you say your prayers every night. So I already knew, like, at a young age, that there is much more going on. Like, I was already being pulled down the, you know, the rabbit hole, the paranormal, at a very young age. Like, I knew there was things going on.
Do you think your parents knew more about the paranormal than they let on, just judging by your father's reaction there? Or it wasn't,
yeah, absolutely.
It wasn't a dismissive, oh, okay, whatever, say your prayers. It was more of a serious, make sure you say your prayers.
Like, he was freaked out. But then again, you know, like I said, my mother would tell me stories, like the story with the apartment and the man hanging himself. And she remembers telling me, I remember her telling me a story of back years ago when they would have, people would put like salt on the, like around the house mm-hmm. to keep the spirits away. So it's like, if you're believing in things like this, you believe in the paranormal.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you'd have to, otherwise, why would you be doing it? You know, it's not like,
exactly.
This is
exactly.
not an HGTV tip. This is,
you know,
yeah. Why do you think, you know, as you look back on all this to where you are today and the cases that you've gone through, overall, why do you think you were drawn to the darker side of ghost hunting, the darker side? Why did your interests go more into that realm of things versus obviously all the other parts of this that it could go to?
Well, I mean, I'm into all of it, but sure. As far as like demonic hauntings,
yeah,
I think it's the fact I was brought up like seriously Catholic. I mean, going to church every Sunday. I went to Catholic school. I was baptized. I made communion. I made confirmation. And my grandmother was very religious. And I remember, like, she would come to the house if I had a really bad headache. She would come to the house and do basically it's a ritual called the anointing of the sick, where she would put holy oil on my head and she would recite prayers. Well, here I am all these years later, and I still have that holy oil, and I use it when I go on hauntings,
mm-hmm.
which that, you know, so yeah, I just, being brought up Catholic and, you know, believing in God and knowing that, you know, demons could torment people. I really wanted to, get into that and help people. And it's the taboo corner of the paranormal, because a lot of people think it's nonsense. I know it is not. And also, I was heavily influenced by Ed and Lorraine Warren when I was younger, which is just incredible, because now here I am, and I'm actually on their team. I joined the New England Society for Psychic Research late last year, right at the end of filming Ghost Loop.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, here I am now, and I couldn't be happier to be on this team. And the stories I've heard from the investigators I investigate with, and everyone's amazing. And I couldn't be happier.
Yeah, I mean, it obviously it's very interesting, especially that group and their history, you know, one of the longest running, you know, versions of that exists. Let's talk about some more of your childhood and kind of as you grew, you were surrounded by, you know, not necessarily, I mean, yes, the paranormal in one way, but you were also surrounded by, you know, religious rituals and things of that nature that were very much believed by your family, that this is what you do in this situation or that situation, just as a way of life. And when you're a kid and that's what's around you, you don't question it. You just know these are the adults.
Just do it.
Yeah. This is what they do. And you almost assume everybody, you know, must do these sort of things. It's not all, you know, until you exit that environment that you realize, not everybody's grandma does that. And then it becomes more like, well, is that normal, quote unquote, or is it?
Yeah, I kind of went through that phase once I got into a high school.
Sure.
Like, hey, what the hell are you doing? What's this? What were you doing? It's like, well, this is how I was brought up.
Yeah.
This is how I was raised, you know?
When you have that strong, you know, a family connection and just kind of an overall, you know, they believed in it, not necessarily like talking about it all the time, but more like, yeah, there's grass growing in the front yard. We don't need to discuss it. You know, it's there.
Yeah.
You know, it's just kind of like that. And that's different than a family that denies it or anything or just doesn't want to talk about it. It's just kind of part of life and it pops its head every now and then. Did you ever go through a point as you got older, like into high school, and you started to make those recognitions of not, you know, my family accepts this seemingly more easy than many others? Did you ever have a moment, you know, of, you know, sometimes it's rebellion or whatever, where you go, I don't know that I believe all this, you know, ghostly stuff my family seems to just accept as fact? Or did you continue to kind of have things that would reinforce it for you, going, you guys can believe whatever the hell you want, but I think there's something more to this?
As far as like the religious aspect and believing in God and all that stuff, or just the paranormal?
I think the two almost go hand in hand, because I always kind of felt like to have one, you have to have the other.
Exactly. I mean, I kind of went through a little phase in high school where I mean, as we all do, I got a little rebellious and I was playing drums in a heavy metal band, and the religious thing, you know, kind of wasn't paying attention to it for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
And I just got really into music, and all I wanted to do was run around and play shows with my band. And then that kind of fizzled out. I mean, I did it for like 10 years, and I'm like, how long am I going to do this?
Sure.
I still love playing music, but I started really getting into the paranormal. It was like mid-20s, and I really just dove headfirst into it. And then I started having like some personal experiences that really brought me back into believing in everything I believed in when I was younger, and like really solidifying it for me.
Mm-hmm.
There was something that had happened at the house with my mom. She had low blood pressure, and it was really scary. I used to work third shift, and I was like sleeping at like 6 o'clock at night before I went to work. And my dad starts freaking out, because my mother was in the bathroom and she was in there for like a while. And we're like, are you all right, Ma? You know, what's going on? And I go to like knock on the door, and like, there's no response. And I instantly knew something was wrong. And I looked at my father and I was like, I'm kicking this door in right now. And I kicked the door in. I like split my knees open. I'm bleeding everywhere. And there was my mother. And she was sitting there, and eyes wide open, mouth open. I thought she was dead. And I had pulled her out, and I started praying, and I held a relic to her. And she just woke up immediately, had no idea what had happened. We called an ambulance. She was fine. And that was a very serious moment for me, where it was like, all right, you started praying again every day, took the religious thing really seriously. Like, that's a big part of what I do as an investigator now. I mean, if I go out on a case, if I have no equipment at all, as long as I have a bottle of holy water with me, I'm good.
Mm-hmm.
And I always make sure I have holy water on me. I have a vest that I always wear when I go on cases, and there's always a bottle of holy water in there. And I have blessed Saint Benedict medals, which are very powerful against the demonic, holy relics from Saint Padre Pio, Saint Benedict. I believe in the power of prayer.
Mm-hmm.
I know it works. I went through a couple of really bad dark times in my life, and I knew people were praying for me that had faith. And I could literally, I mean, I am so sincere when I say this to you. I felt this depression lifting off of me. I went through a real rough patch maybe around 5 years ago, and I felt it coming off of me, and I couldn't believe how fast it was happening, and I knew there was a substantial amount of people praying for me. So, I mean, I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, I mean, it answered my question, and it gave me many more to ask, because there's a lot of things I want to talk about there. Since the last thing you mentioned was feeling that depression come off of you, and obviously, depression is a real thing. It's not necessarily tied to the paranormal in all cases by any means. You know, can there be things where those things feed off of it and can make it worse? Sure, but I just want to be clear to our audience, we're not saying depression is always demonic attachments or something, because it's certainly
not
at all. But when you felt that coming off of you, because regular old depression, old school depression, that's just completely 100%. It is mental, physical. It's something chemical going on within your body. That's not usually something that just kind of lifts. This is going to take some work to really get it to go. I suffer from it. Yeah. My wife suffers from it. I understand it very well. But when it comes to something like that, where you could feel that thing lifting off of you, do you look back on that as maybe there was something more here than just, you know, my depression that was either, you know, flaring up, you know, for lack of a better term, and it's been present for quite some time, and now it's just kind of going away? Or do you think there was some sort of, you know, attachment, something else that was, you know, turning the volume to 20 when otherwise your body by itself could keep it at a solid 10?
No, I did think of that at the time, and that you know, that could have been going on. I remember when I was going through this state of depression, a good friend of mine, my buddy Sean Austin, he was also on the show Ghost Loop with me. We've been investigating for like 4 years together now. He's a good friend of mine. Mm-hmm. I remember talking to him every day when I was going through this, and he's like, just, you know, be careful, man, because, you know, there could be something, you know, enhancing your emotions right now. Because, I mean, I was pretty messed up, and I thank God every day for getting through that. But I definitely thought about that, because I had been investigating, you know, when this had happened to me, and there was a case we had done in Jersey, which, I mean, I could spend hours talking about this case, where I believe something demonic was following me around. I mean, we could talk about that for a little bit if you'd like.
Let's get to that in just a little bit. I have a few more questions about what you had just talking about, but I do want to get to that that case in Jersey. In fact, I'm just making a note about it, because my mind will go scattered and go, what was I going to ask him about? but before we get to that, I want to go back to what you said about your mom, where you had broken the door down. You had a bleeding knee. She was lying there with her mouth open and her eyes open, and you thought she was dead. Mm-hmm. Medical personnel come. They look at her. Everything, you know, checks out. She's okay. What happened? What do you think happened?
Well, I know. I mean, my mother does have diabetes, and here and there she would have little moments where she would kind of like pass out. I mean, it happened a couple other times. Yeah. But this was the one where it was like, oh my God, like, oh my God. And I mean, for her to be completely unconscious and then she just snaps right out of it. I mean, there was another time where she had fallen off the edge of her bed, and I ran over her, started praying, put a relic to her, and she just opened her eyes.
Yeah.
What happened, Eric? I'm like, well, you passed out again, Mom. And she's, you know, stubborn Italian. The ambulance will come. No, I'm fine. I don't want to go to the hospital.
Yeah.
What solidified my beliefs even more, though, was the fact that her coming right out of it as soon as I put a relic to her forehead and opening her eyes instantly.
Yeah, that's not something you typically see during the evening programs on television for diabetes control. It's like from Pfizer. And, you know, they have like a little, like, you know, it's a Padre Pio medal that you can take with you, and you can get it by prescription only. Ask your doctor about it today. You know, and then can you imagine the disclaimers on that one? But that's what I want to ask about next is relics on cases or just things that are representations, whether it be oil, something of that nature, from the church. that you take okay. with you. You said that's, you know, if you could take one thing with you on the, you know, on the survivor ghost hunt, that's what you would take is your holy water. Okay. So I want to talk about that. I want to understand that a little bit better from your perspective. Obviously, there's all sorts of hauntings, at least from my perspective, maybe yours too. I don't want to ever speak for you.
Yeah, of course there are.
Yeah. So over the years of doing my programs over the last 7-8 years, I've heard literally tens of thousands of ghost stories. So my ghost family tree, too, is just insane. You know, you go into this thinking, I'm going to have some answers, or I'll have more answers than questions. You end up with more questions than answers by the end of it. Because it's like, well, this happens. Then what does that mean for this? So when it comes to relics, I totally understand the correlation there, where if it's something that is truly demonic or has that negative intent that was not earthly, that to me makes sense, where you got the relic and that thing's having power over it. But what about the cases that do not appear to be of demonic nature, where it appears to those who are having the experiences, it's Uncle Will who died years ago, and he's just he's just checking in every now and then. In your encyclopedia, in your ghost family tree, I'd have to ask: is that in fact even Will that's showing up as the uncle, or is it something else? Do relics work on every type of paranormal case?
Well, I mean, as far as, like you said, Uncle Will showing up, how do you know it's Uncle Will? Well, you know, I'm sure all the stories you've heard, the demonic could pretend to be anything they want to gain recognition. But to answer your question about being on a case of like an earthbound spirit, would a something religious, a relic, help the haunting?
Yeah,
it may. It depends what that person's personal belief was. So, I mean, you're not just going to, you know, run into a house and there's no demons there, but there's, you know, an earthbound spirit and just start screaming in the name of Jesus Christ. I command you to give me a sign of your presence, because then this spirit is going to be like, well, why are you yelling at me? You know, what are you doing? Why are you laying out all these medals and holy water? I'm not a monster. I'm just checking out my family. There are investigators that think it helps to, you know, in the name of God, ask. Maybe it'll make them feel more comfortable, the earthbound spirits, to speak to them. I guess it's personal preference how you want to go about your investigation. But you know, the religious you know, the relics, the holy water, I always make sure I have all that stuff. I'm told I'm going to undertake a demonic haunting.
That's just my question, is does it work when it is an earthbound spirit, someone who, you know, it's not something that was never walking this earth?
You know, I've never really tried, because I never felt threatened. For me, it was always like those are the weapons when you're going up the demonic. But if you're just going to help someone in a home because they think, you know, their husband who had passed away is there, I'm not going to bring an arsenal of relics. And I mean, I'll have my holy water on me, because you never know what could come, you know, swooping around, because I believe there's spirits everywhere. I have yet to encounter a situation like that. I only use the holy water, the holy oil, the holy relics when I know I'm going up against something evil. But I'm sure it wouldn't hurt, because then again, like I said, if this person was very religious, it might make them feel more comfortable to come forth and speak with you. Okay, there's these people here. They're trying to communicate with me. They're, you know, talking about God. They're asking me to speak in the name of God. I feel more comfortable talking to these people now. Is it something I would do? Sure. But what I've done so far, I really just use those things when I'm going on a case that I know is demonic.
That wraps up part one of our conversation with Eric Vitale about dealing with demons. In part two of our conversation, what happened to Eric in New Jersey that made him believe something was attached to him? Are there any tools that he does not use on an investigation? Is a spirit box possibly more dangerous than a Ouija board? Are there things that can attract dark spirits or demonic entities to someone? And what were some of the causes in the cases that Eric has investigated? All of that and more in part two of our conversation with Eric. You can hear it by becoming a Gravekeeper. That is a supporter of our program just by going to patreon.com/thegravetalks or just go to thegravetalks.com and click Become a Gravekeeper. That will take you right there. When you become a Gravekeeper, you get access to all of our interviews, hundreds of them in their entirety, part one and part two, as well as access to advanced episodes of our show, oftentimes months before they're released to the public in their entirety. If you're ready to binge away on some of the scariest ghost stories ever told, then become a Gravekeeper and help support our program to keep us on the air. Patreon.com/thegravetalks to do just that. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Persky. Thanks for listening.